Welcome to the Trees for Development podcast. My name is Sophia Hagelani Alba. Today on the podcast, we are super excited to be joined by one of our University of Helsinki project researchers and one of his valued co-collaborators from one of our case study countries. As we kick off here, first we are going to hear from Osi, who works in Finland with me at University of Helsinki, and we're going to hear a little bit about who he is and how he got into this project, and then we're going to turn more specifically to look at Mozambique, which is one of the case study countries in the Trees for Dev project. Well, I don't want to take even an extra second of time because I am really excited to get into this conversation. So, Osi, would you like to tell our listeners who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you, Sophia. So I'm Osi Ollinaho, University Researcher, Global Development Studies of University of Helsinki. I have researched rural development, general kind of genuinely sustainable stuff such as agroecology, agroforestry, before, and now we started to think about this very trendy concept and practice of ecological restoration with Markus Kröger and Maria Estrin Fuentes and others, also with Sophia. So we started to mount up the project plan for this topic, and we wanted to study many countries in the global south. And as I have some experience in research in Mozambique, 10 years ago, I was there, 2013, studying this kind of three-party Brazilian-Japanese Mozambican development project, this kind of pro-savanna that was very grandioso and a little bit problematic in many senses. So we went to study that in the north of Mozambique. And in my experiences in Mozambique, I was familiarized with this very interesting organization called Observatorio do Meio Rural, which is a civil society organization making lots of research in rural development. And at the time, we were wanting to do some cooperation with that organization, applied for a big funding with them, which didn't work. And now I got the second chance to work with them. So we contacted them and they were interested to joining this project. And I'm very, very happy with that. Anyhow, we thought that it would be very interesting to study this ecological restoration there, because we know that in Mozambique as well, there has been problems of deforestation and land degradation. So let's see, we have just started. We have almost all the research in front of us.
Thank you so much, Osi. We really appreciate that contextualization. And it's really interesting to hear how you got to the point where you're working on this project and some of the behind the scenes on why Mozambique, why OMR. However, I think this is a really good moment to introduce into the conversation our lovely co-collaborator from OMR. So Mariam, would you like to tell our listening audience who you are, what you do, why you're here with us today?
Thank you, Sophia, and thank you for inviting me to be a part of this podcast. My name is Mariam Abash. I am a researcher at Observatorio do Meio Rural, OMR, which, as Osi already explained, is an independent research institution in Mozambique, which focuses on agriculture and rural areas and rural development, aiming to contribute to sustainable development of rural areas and also trying to influence policies aimed at the agricultural sector and influencing farmers and rural population. So I have been a researcher at OMR since its foundation, which was in 2011. And my background is in economics, and I recently finished my PhD in development studies, where I studied the impact of climate change on farming systems in Mozambique and the effect of these impacts on food security for Mozambique. And I have been coordinating the research line on environment and rural areas at OMR, which is a research line that focuses on the impacts of climate change on agriculture, but we also analyze the causes of deforestation. We also try to understand the main challenges for biodiversity conservation and for mainstreaming biodiversity into the agricultural sector. We have a lot of projects that we are developing in this sense. And so the Tree for Development project was very much aligned with what we see as our main goals for this research line. And I believe that with the knowledge that the partners, either from Finland or from other case studies that they will bring, I think this will be very interesting, not only for Mozambique, but for the other countries, but for Mozambique specifically, because we have seen a lot of these ecological reforestation projects and how they have been impacting the rural sector or the rural areas in Mozambique. And I think we need to learn a little bit more on that, on the benefits, but also the negative impact on the rural population. So I believe that this project will contribute to that and will also bring or raise awareness also to our cooperation partners that have been investing in Mozambique, either on the private sector, but also for the government, because I believe that we need to start influencing opinions, not only at the national level, but also we need to raise this awareness to the global level, let's say. So bring this conversation as well to our cooperation partners, development partners that have been investing in Mozambique, and also the private sector that has been investing in Mozambique. So I believe this is why OMR is also part of this project, because as Ossie said, we have been doing some research in this area. We have some studies on the green extractivism, that is how these forest plantation projects, how these have been impacting the population and how there has been this running for the biodiversity resources and forest resources in Mozambique due to mitigation to climate change. So in light of this global discussion about the climate crisis, I believe that this project would not come in a better moment.
Thank you so much for sharing a bit about what you do and what brought you here. But I feel like I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage. Ossie has been to Mozambique. Obviously, you've been to Mozambique, but I've never been there. And I'm hoping that maybe you could set the scene a little bit for me and our listeners. Tell us about Mozambique a little. Like, what's it like there?
Yes, thank you, Sophia. Well, I will start by saying that Mozambique is a very beautiful country, and I think you should visit. And Ossie, I think Ossie can confirm that. But apart from that, well, Mozambique is located in the southern part of Africa along the coast. And it's mostly an agricultural country, as almost 70% of the population depends on agriculture for their subsistence and for their main source of income. And also Mozambique is considered one of the poorest countries in the world, as almost 50% of the population is considered to be living in a situation of poverty. And besides that, it's also considered one of the African countries most vulnerable to climate change, which will really pose a lot of challenges for the rural population who has agriculture as their main source of income. And when I say agriculture, it's agricultural, but also they depend a lot on forest resources for their subsistence, for wood, and also to gather some products in the forest, either for medicine purposes or for food or for building houses. So forest has also a very important role in the rural population subsistence. And agriculture is a very big part of our economy. I believe that 1/4, 25% of the GDP comes from the agricultural sector, which shows the great importance of this sector. But it's also a sector that has not seen a lot of growth in the past 20 to 25 years. And crop productivity is very, very low in the country. But because of the context of Mozambique, in which farmers produce not using a lot of fertilizers, this can be also an advantage on how to build and how to enhance agroecological techniques to increase agricultural production and food in Mozambique.
Yes, indeed. Mozambique is a fairly big country, about 2,000 kilometers at least north to south, and it has lots of forests. 40% about the land cover is forests, different types. But there's quite much deforestation, like a steadily increasing deforestation. At the moment, something almost 250,000 hectares per year. partly due to that large populations are dependent on subsistence on forests, and the practices may not be the most adequate. So whatever we do in this project, it is very important to be able to take into account the livelihoods of local populations. And that's kind of like any ecological restoration scheme that doesn't improve the livelihoods is probably not going to function or work. And I want to raise this, Mariam talked about the economy a little bit, that it is measured as GDP, one of the poorest countries in the world. But it is a very porous economic system. The reason why half of the population lives in poverty is due to the very extractivist and inequality creating structures in place already for a long time, both national but especially international. The international investments that come into sectors such as aluminium, they are very large in scale, and typically the corporations do not pay any taxes, and kind of they're not compatible with the local economies very, very rarely. And this is, of course, made possible due to the very high dependence of the Mozambican economy, Mozambican society, by the actors in the global north, the very unequal relations. Yeah, so it's a very difficult situation in terms of larger economical situation to be able to improve local conditions. Somehow, we can go only so far in improving local conditions with different restoration schemes. We don't touch or don't address the broader structures. And this climate change, warming climate, while it has various types of impacts in these rural livelihoods, there are some kind of drastic changes that has come to the ever stronger cyclones and ever more frequent cyclones to the country. We have seen for the first time a cyclone that traverses the whole Indian Ocean. So these kind of issues we have to take into account, but at the same time, it's very kind of, we need to think like, how can we and how can different ecological restoration schemes address, mitigate, and help to adapt to these conditions?
Yes, absolutely. Ecological restoration that doesn't take local livelihoods into account, like, it's not going to succeed in the long run. But I have to admit, I'm still a bit curious, and sorry to harp on this, but I really want to get a good mental picture here. You said about 40% of the country is covered in forest, but what kind of forests are we talking about? You know, is it a tropical forest? Is it a pine forest? Like, what are we looking at on the ground? What types of different biomes are present within the Mozambican landscape?
Yes, Sophia, around 40 to 43% of the country's surface is covered in forests, and it's a natural forest. It's around 34 million hectares of natural forests. And also, Mozambique and these 40% of natural forests are considered also one of the few countries in Southern Africa with such a considerable area of native forests and other native woody formations such as the Miombo, Mekruz, and Mopan. In Mozambique, I believe that around 70% of the natural forests are Miombo woodlands, and 9% is Mopane, and around 1% will be mangroves. And there are, of course, other biomes, but these are the most important and from which most of the population relies on. And as Osim mentioned, there have been a lot of deforestation, and deforestation levels have remained high in the last years. Although if we go back to, let's say, 20 years ago, the deforestation levels have been very high between 2003 and 2013, and then they reduced. But in the last, let's say, 5 to 6 years, we have been seeing an increase in deforestation. At OMR, we have done a research to try to understand the main causes of deforestation in Zambezia, which is located in the central region of Mozambique and has a great potential for biodiversity conservation. And I believe that 40% or even more of the area of the land surface of Zambezia is covered in forests. So there is great potential for forest conservation and biodiversity conservation. And when we were trying to understand the main causes, and this is linked with what Ossie was saying, is that it's linked mainly to poverty. Because if the population doesn't have anything to eat or doesn't have income, they will open areas which previously were forest areas, they will open these areas to farm. So farming has been the main source of deforestation, but it's being done because people need to farm something to eat. So from our study, deforestation has been strongly related with poverty level. So where poverty is more intense, deforestation is also more intense. So what we see here is that if we want to reduce deforestation levels, we have to invest in other aspects of the economic lives of the population. We have to promote jobs. We have to try to integrate the rural population in the projects that are happening at the local level. Because what we see here in Mozambique is that with this concern about the environmental impact and the environmental crisis, there have been, as I mentioned before, and I think Ossie mentioned as well, is that we have seen this increasing interest to develop, let's say, REDD+ projects, which are mainly concerned in reducing emissions, reforestation, and carbon capture, let's say. And what we see, especially for this area in Zambezia, which we study with some depth, is that most of these projects, they have a negative impact on the population. Why is that? It's because they are implemented in a top-down basis. So these are projects that are defined in collaboration, probably with the investor or the development partner or the cooperation partner, in cooperation with the government, of course. But the communities, they are not consulted on how these projects should be developed. And what ends up happening is that most of these projects, they don't go in line with the ways of living of the population. So these projects, they create a rupture in the livelihoods of the population who depends on these resources to survive. So the creation, for instance, of conservation areas, which strictly prohibits families and communities to go inside this conservation area, either to just take a plant for medicinal purposes, this creates this kind of rupture in the livelihoods of this population, which ends up contributing to increase poverty in a community that was already suffering from poverty. So it deepens the poverty in that area. And this is supposed to be linked with compensation. But what we have seen is that the compensation schemes linked to this kind of project, they don't actually, the words are coming to me in Portuguese. wait, maybe Ossie can help me that here. Eu quero dizer que os benefícios e as compensações não
abrangem. The benefits of these projects do not cover the whole populations. They just cover a small part of the populations, and especially those that are in the best position, kind of have the most power in those communities.
Thank you, Ossie. That was exactly what I wanted to say, and I think it summarized well the message that I wanted to transmit. Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. It was exciting on my end to get to, you know, hear some Portuguese also puts it more in context. So I was wondering, we've heard a lot about kind of what's happening on the ground, but who are these actors that we're talking about? Who's actually involved in enacting these tree planting schemes? And also, like, who is at the top going from the top down in putting these things into action?
Well, there's a variety of actors involved, as in every country. There are different national NGOs, like, for example, Centro Terra Viva, which is in English called Environmental Studies and Advocacy Organization. There are national, like, civil society actors, such as UNACI, National Union of Peasants is a very prominent actor, has more than 150,000 members. There are different international NGOs, like Tree Sisters, lots of them, I think. But we are going to map and analyze these. For example, World Bank, in the form of Global Environmental Facility, has funded different projects. And of course, as Marianne has mentioned, the state is involved in many, many ways in these ecological restoration schemes. And it's typically that there are different power relations involved. And we are going to study the global influence on also Mozambican policies and politics. But it's like enough, the typical is that international money that comes, it goes through some kind of international NGO, then they collaborate with national NGOs, local NGOs, who collaborate with local communities. And it is kind of the local communities are typically in the end of this kind of chain of command. And it should be the other way around, kind of that it should be the local communities, as Marianne said, that local communities whose lives, whose culture practices, all that is the starting point of departure for these projects, these schemes. So there's a lot to do in terms of reorganizing, reformulating, rethinking these schemes, that how could they be of use, of real use. And in this project, I'm particularly interested in different schemes and projects, ideas, approaches of this UNACI, National Union of Peasants, but I want to also look into other actors.
Just to add on what Ossie was saying, is that I see, for instance, two types of actors. There are the ones such as UNAC, which is the Peasant National Union, which have a more integrated approach to ecological restoration. And they involve the communities, the farmers. So they have this more integrated approach. And then there are other actors such as the World Bank, the government, actors such as Biofund, which have also been implementing these reforestation and restoration in some degraded areas. But most of these projects want to respond to the Red Plus program. So most in a way to reduce emissions and capture carbon and then sell it to the more industrialized countries. What a colleague of mine calls like taking the rights from the peasants to emit, to then give to, for instance, an industry or a company in China so they can pollute. So there are these two types of actors, the ones that are trying to do this in a more integrated area for the greater good of both the environment, but also the population, and the other actors, which seem to have more of an economic interest to it. So these kind of projects are more linked with the economic profit rather than the environment or development of rural population. So I think it's important to look at both actors and how these type of projects, they impact the communities and how we can learn from either both type of projects to try to create a better environment in which we can implement ecological restoration projects that will have a positive impact both in the environment, but also, and I think most importantly, for the context of Mozambique, that will create development and for the rural population. Because as I said before, if we don't create rural development, if we don't create opportunities for the population to have income and to satisfy their food needs, we will not be able to reduce deforestation levels. And we can do this the hard way, which is imposing this project, but I don't think that's the way to go. And unfortunately, this is what has been happening in the last years. There have been a lot of projects that has been focused on restoration of degraded areas, mainly in conservation areas, but a lot of projects that are linked with the Red Plus programs with the extremely negative impacts on the population. So I think it's interesting to see how, for instance, this global interest on ecological restoration and on REDD+ and the climate crisis, how this has been shaping, for instance, policies in Mozambique, and how this has been shaping the kind of projects that we are allowing into the rural areas, and how we can either improve this and try to focus on the positive impact, or try to align this with the positive impact that it could have on the rural communities. And of course, besides UNAC, there is other NGOs, as Ossie mentioned, that have been also working in this sense, for instance, in trying to create community conservation areas, which I think it's an integrated way also to focus on biodiversity conservation, but also to ecological restoration in degraded areas. So I am very open to these integrated and, let's say, community integrated projects rather than the ones that are defined top down or defined outside of Mozambique and then being implemented here, because it does not fit the local context. And we have seen, and we have many studies that say if a project is not in line with the local context, it will not have success, or it will not promote development in that community.
Yes, indeed. Very good thinking. I want to add that, of course, also the local practices are to be influenced, are to be improved. And what we are much interested in this project is different agroforestry schemes. Kind of, if it's reforestation, we think it should somehow improve the livelihoods. And with agroforestry, different agroforest systems, they are very resilient in facing climate changes like longer droughts and even floods. So it would be very important to be able to have the notion of forests that can be not eaten, but its products can be eaten. I discussed with one UNAC leader. He said that typically peasants, they don't see trees to belong to the food production. So it's also to do with these different notions, different concepts of what is food production, what would this land use, how to use land and all this kind of thing. So it's very interesting to see the potential for agroforestry in this. And one thing that I would like to analyze, to observe, to understand better in this project is the mangroves, because especially against those cyclones, it would be very important to have some kind of like buffer zones in the littoral area. And Mozambique has a very long, much littoral area, like thousands of kilometers. And it depends a lot like what kind of vegetation there is, or if there's a vegetation at all. And it would be interesting also to go a bit beyond here and now, to start thinking about in the longer term future about these possibilities, even a bit like utopian possibilities in Mozambique. But yeah, that's one kind of dimension that would be nice to be able to engage in.
Yeah, definitely, Ossie. I think I agree with you. And there has been a lot of projects developing this sense of mangroves restoration here in the south of Mozambique, along the coast in Maputo, but also in Gaza, but also up in Zambezi, Cabo Delgado. So there have been a lot of work that has been done in that sense of mangrove restoration. So I think it will be very interesting to look at this, as well as the agroforestry. I think there is also a great opportunity to look into these examples. And also, I believe that this is actually something that could bring some contribution, not only looking at the environmental part, but also at the socioeconomic aspect that can contribute to rural development and to resilience as well.
Wow. I mean, this seems like such an interesting and complex landscape of forests, ecological restoration, top-down schemes, hopefully establishment of more bottom-up work that actually works with the livelihoods in place. But even though I feel like we're just barely scratching the surface, unfortunately, I can't take any more of your time today. Our time has run through. And like I said, I feel like there's so much more that we could potentially talk about. But before we say our goodbyes for today, is there anything else that you'd like to highlight for our listeners about the Trees for Development project or the work that it's doing in the Mozambican context?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting that the CMNPU Foundation, a very prominent Finnish NGO. It has worked for a long time in Mozambique, kind of funding and cooperating with Mozambican NGOs and local communities. So we are going to engage with it closely in this project. And there's going to be one master level student, Ville Gustafsson, who is going to do his master's thesis within this project. And he will be studying the international NGOs and Siemens Pusat here in Mozambique. So I'm very pleased to have him involved as well.
Yes, and from our side in Mozambique, from OMR, we have also two young researchers that have been working at OMR under the environmental research line, which are Neemias and Melika, and they will be also working on this project with us. And I believe that this exchange of knowledge between the students and the coordinators, I think it will be very good, the exchange of knowledge between these two institutions. And yeah, thank you so much, Ossie, for inviting me and for inviting OMR to be a part of this exciting project.
Well, thank you for participating. I'm really, really delighted about that.
And thank you both for joining me today on the Trees for Dev podcast. The socio-ecological and politico-economic dynamics of ecological restoration through tree planting schemes in the Global South, called the Trees for Development Project. Trees for Development, or Trees for Dev, on social media and our website, is a consortium project between Honkin School of Economics and the University of Helsinki, funded by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs through the Develop 2 instrument, which is a co-produced instrument between the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Finnish Research Council. The Trees for Development podcast is funded by a societal impact grant from the Helsinki Institute of Sustainability Science, HELSIS, at University of Helsinki. You can find the Trees for Development project on Twitter at Trees4Dev and also on the internet at www.treesfordev.fi. If you'd like to stay up to date both on the Trees for Development project and also as episodes for this podcast come out, please join the Trees for Development mailing list, which is what we will use to make sure that all important information about the project is passed to interested parties. So definitely join that mailing list. Once again, our website is www.treesfordev.fi and it will be linked below.